the Bruins want a piece of Subban.
Welcome to the 2-4. I'm Zach Vanoss. Along with me, Sean O'Neill. How's it going? It goes good. All things considered, the fact that we cheer for a terrible hockey team, I'm all right.
Fair enough.
I'm sitting here, I'm wearing my Habs sweater. I'm still rocking it, but trying times for those of us who care greatly about this organization.
Yeah, no kidding. I'm also just coincidentally in my Camilleri shirt, not that I wore it because we're talking about the Habs, but still love the team, but I told myself when we did the emergency podcast on Friday that I wasn't, basically whatever happened over the next couple of days, I'm not really happy with the direction this team's headed in, and certainly, even though we got 3 out of 4 points in the 2 games since then, I don't feel much differently than I did a week ago. It's still treading water at the very best. So,
well, I mean, I considered, I was weighing the options of which wake up to play when we started this podcast, whether or not I'd go with the Arcade Fire, which you just heard there, or I'd go with the Rage Against the Machine wake up that we played for the emergency podcast. But I guess this is a regularly scheduled podcast.
So I guess we got to go with the upbeat intro, even though things aren't particularly upbeat for Habs Nation at the moment.
No, not at all. And last night we're watching the game, and as everybody probably knows, with like less than a minute left, Gionta scores to tie it, forcing an overtime. Montreal loses eventually, and I texted you at that time, is there any team that you've ever seen just kind of hang on the balance the way this team seems to, in terms of always giving just enough, always finding just enough to keep everybody's job alive and to keep feeding us all a little bit of hope?
Yeah, that's exactly it. And I plan on hopefully posting something soon, but I was surprised even by my own reaction last night when Gionta scored. I was, normally a goal with under a minute left to tie the game, you're standing up and you're fist pumping, and I was just ambivalent and almost to a certain extent, I didn't want to see it because I wanted that team to get booed off the ice. I wanted the Fire Martin chant to get going. So we got a point. I guess that's nice. But in order for this team to really start growing, maybe they need to hit rock bottom first. But like you said, they never quite get to that point. There's just enough talent on the roster that they never quite hit rock bottom. They'll lose a couple in a row, but just as Martin's job security starts to become an issue, they'll string together 3 points in 2 games and it'll quiet down the rumor mill for another week. And like you said, they just do enough. In the last couple of years, they've just done enough to make the playoffs, and they just do enough to keep Martin's job, and they show just enough promise that, we don't blow the whole thing up and actually rebuild. It's, the bare minimum, but they always manage to hit that threshold.
It's like with anybody who's has an addiction of any kind. You need to hit rock bottom before you can take the proper measures to go get help. And as long as they refuse to hit rock bottom and find little moments to build something on, not that anything gets constructed in the end, but as long as they keep doing what they did against the Blue Jackets, we're going to continue in the same way. As you say, it's just, there's just enough keeps getting done that enough people are kept happy. You and I obviously not in that camp anymore. But enough people are still kept somewhat happy and somewhat hopeful. I mean, what, they're 1 point out of a playoff spot or something simple? Like, they're right there at the same time. And so it's hard for some to justify with them so close firing Jacques Martin, but I think that's accepting the eighth place as an acceptable place. And with what you and I have talked about quite a bit on this podcast now, the expectations that we had at the beginning of the season from the team that took the eventual Stanley Cup champions to overtime in Game 7, that team should do better than just scraping into the playoffs once more. So I think they're far below where they should be. Some people seem to think they're 1 point behind where they accept this team being.
Yeah, and I mean, mathematically, they're in the mix just because the East has been really sort of nondescript so far. But I've watched this team, and this isn't a playoff team. And even if we're pinning, you know, eighth place as the bare minimum of what we accept, this isn't a playoff team that's currently constituted. I've watched this team. They don't play good hockey. They don't play smart hockey. The power play, which has been the key to our success for so many years now, just isn't clicking. And it's like, once you remove that ingredient, this team can't do anything. They play this boring, uninspired hockey. So yeah, they're in the mix, kind of, for that eighth spot, for whatever that's worth. But this isn't a good hockey team.
No, it is not.
And it's just not. And I mean, the other thing is, you know, like we said, they just do enough, and none of those moments, those glimpses we see when they're doing enough, none of those feel like turning points, you know?
Yeah,
if I thought that point last night was, you know, the start of something, we've got, what, 5 of our next 6 at home, or 4 of the next 5, whatever it is. If I felt like that was the start of something, you know, it's against Columbus, but you come back, you get a point, and then, you know, maybe you go on a bit of a run, that'd be one thing. But I never get that sense with this team. It's, you know, a point here, a point there, a nice win here, a nice win there, but it's never the start of anything.
Speaking of the start of something, you want to open up the opening 20?
I like that segue.
I'm the king of segues, they say. You want to go give me number one? What do you got?
Number one, not surprisingly, this was a pretty pretty eventful week in the NHL. You giving the thumbs up or the thumbs down to this dramatic realignment plan?
Well, here's my thoughts on it. It's something dramatic and something, you know, that's going to change the way the game's not played, but it's going to change the way we see our opponents, the way games matter, points matter. And for that, I give a thumbs up to the NHL, for simply because sports always move so slow, and this just kind of seemed to happen fairly quickly, and they most of the governors agreed on it. So my thumbs up to the NHL for bothering to try some innovation. And otherwise, I don't know that I've made up my mind. I wanted to hear what you had to say, because I said I could be swayed. Right now, I feel fine about it. Not bad, not good, fine. But I do want to hear what you have to say, because I know you don't like it.
I didn't at first. I'm less sort of gung-ho about it either way now. I think I'm kind of like you. You know, I saw it. I was surprised by it.
Yeah, definitely.
It just seemed like a really dramatic step just because one franchise, you know, switched. And I didn't really have a problem with the current system. I always thought the most sensible solution was just, you know, you move Winnipeg over to the Central Division, and you move maybe Nashville, I guess, down to the Southeast. I would have been fine with that. They wanted something more dramatic, obviously. I'm still trying to figure out whether I like it or not. I probably won't know
until, I think it's going to take
until
a few
it happens.
Years.
I mean, you know, a couple years of this system. There are things about it that I like. I like the trying to have to claw your way out of your division type thing that they used to have, and that they're your conference, I guess. But I like the, you know, the conference semifinals, then the conference finals, then the NHL semifinals, and then the Stanley Cup. So that part of it I like. There are other parts of it I don't love so much. You know, the fact that we only see the Rangers in the Bell Center and the Penguins and the Flyers in the Bell Center once a year from this point forward, I'm not crazy about.
No, I think there's good, I think there's bad, and I think we won't really know how we feel about it until a few years in. Though I'm excited. I mean, the Bruins, we somehow manage to meet them every year anyways. But I'm excited about the prospect of the Toronto Maple Leafs becoming a regular playoff opponent for the Habs going forward. That to me, that's going to be, well, it's probably going to suck living in Toronto, actually. But nonetheless, as a Habs fan and a guy who likes Original Six matchups, and the fact that, you know, maybe this rivalry will get some blood boiling again.
The playoffs are already great, obviously, but yeah, they could become very intense under this system, and that is something I'm looking forward to.
All right, number two, will the realignment help or hurt the Habs?
I don't know if it makes much of a difference one way or the other.
They essentially stay in the same division, just add the Florida teams.
Right, and they're in one of the seven, at least for now, they're in one of the seven-team divisions, which, you know, mathematically speaking, it's a little easier to finishing the top 4 out of 7 as opposed to the top 4 out of 8. I tend to think it might help them a little bit, but at the same time, you know, if you're a really good team, it doesn't matter what the playoff scenario is. You're going to make it to the playoffs comfortably and win once you're in there, you know?
Yeah.
So once you start looking at these matchups and scenarios, that's usually an indication that you're not super confident of where your team is.
I think it's help or hurt. I mean, you could say for the next couple seasons, help or hurt, one way or the other. But, you know, we expect this will probably be the way the NHL is set up for, what, at least a decade going forward. So who knows, you know, where the Boston Bruins head some at some point. Who knows where the Leafs go. Who knows where we go in Florida, Tampa Bay, any of the clubs. Like, you just don't know where they're going to end up. So, you know, maybe the Boston Bruins become the next Detroit Red Wings and are a superpower for years to come. So then it'll be tough having one team that's a guarantee every year. But you just can't tell. I don't think we can know at all if it helps or hurts the Habs at this point in time.
Fair enough, and I'm sure we'll revisit the realignment. Oh, but yeah. Moving on, number 3, do you agree with the decision to keep Louis LeBlanc on the big league roster?
I do agree with that decision, especially because I didn't like any of the other guys that they had playing that position. And, I mean, this is going to be 10 games. They're not going to waste Louis LeBlanc's rookie season this year. It'll be 10 games. He'll go back down. And, you know, we'll get a chance to see. Well, hopefully, you know, provided he plays more than 4 minutes, 57 seconds or whatever bullshit happened the other night. But I like it. 10 games. There's nothing wrong with getting his feet wet. And he's played well. He's played well. I think he certainly earned it. It wasn't simply a choice made because we had no other choice. He's played well. They'll send him back down. He'll feel like he'll understand that he can play at the NHL level. He'll realize that, and that a boost of confidence I don't think can ever really hurt a player. So I like it.
I like it too, if for no other reason than it showed for once a willingness to be flexible on the part of the front office, yeah. Which they haven't shown very often. You know, they initially said he's coming with us to California while Patches is suspended, and he's going back down afterwards, and, you know, which is fine, and I always assumed that was going to be the case, yeah. But they actually changed their mind, which is something you don't see very often, and they're actually flexible. So just for that fact alone, I like it. And like you said, he's played well. I had already seen enough of Aaron Pelugia, and he's, he's competent, but I mean, he's a borderline AHL, NHL guy at this point. He's not bringing much to the table, so I'm perfectly fine with sending him down and seeing what we have. At least getting a glimpse of LeBlanc, like you said, giving him a bit of experience, a bit of confidence, and he hasn't done anything to say that it wasn't warranted. I mean, he certainly hasn't looked out of place.
No, not by any means. And I just wish that in the Tuesday night game that Jacques Martin would have started him. Like, put him in the starting lineup so that his name gets announced as he plays his first ever home game. What, you know, it's not going to change the outcome of the game. It's not going to change anything. At some point, his line's going on. They take it strangely, and this is coming from people who have nothing really to do with the team officially and have a website and a podcast dedicated to him. I find this management takes all of everything that happens a little too seriously. Like, it's all life and death. And it's entertainment. It's meant to be fun. Why can't Louis LeBlanc start last night?
Yeah, like you said, if we're going to be forced to cheer for this crappy team, at least make it kind of fun.
Yeah, exactly.
Right now, it's a crappy team that plays boring hockey, and there's been not a whole lot to cheer about. And yeah, like you said, I mean, he's going to be on the ice for the first 50 seconds anyway. It doesn't really make a difference who your opening line is. Might as well give the kid a chance to get an ovation. I think that would have been a nice gesture, but
what on earth?
I mean, and this isn't just
the
Habs. I mean, teams micromanage this type of stuff to death.
Yeah. And maybe we overanalyze. Maybe it's not such a big deal, but I just don't see that it could have hurt anything at all. There's no way that this could have been a negative to put him out there in the starting. It doesn't make any sense that, and it's not like nobody suggested it. I heard it, you know, a lot of people saying, oh, I hope they put him in the starting lineup. You know, somebody within the organization thought that and perhaps suggested it to either Martin or Gauthier. That'd be a nice gesture, but no. No need for that. We're going to keep doing what we do because it's been working so fucking well. Nothing to add.
Think you're up, buddy.
All right. Why do the Canadians keep stumbling against the bottom feeder teams?
It is bizarre. They seem to, you know, they're at least competitive against the Pittsburghs and Bostons and Phillies of the world, but against the Islanders and the Ducks and the Jackets, they shit the bed. And it's just the mark of an inconsistent team.
Yeah. Where
you show up one night, you don't show up the next. You kind of take these things for granted a little bit. And but, I mean, you know, if the Habs are going to make a run and make the playoffs, you need to get those 2 points against these type of teams. And I know Columbus has been playing better lately and blah, blah, blah. But if you want to make the playoffs, you know, you got to win those games you're supposed to, because you make it really tough on yourself when you give away points like that.
Yeah, no, no question. And did you hear what Carey Price said?
I did not, actually.
Carey said, and I am paraphrasing here, but it was along the themes of essentially what we said. The team doesn't get ready. He came right out and said, "It does." You know, he said against Pittsburgh, we play fantastic. We do what we're supposed to do. And then some of the teams that are on the outside, the weaker teams, for some reason, we're just not ready, and we don't go into those games well. And I mean, for someone on the team to say that, I think that I like the somewhat of a leadership role Price has shown there in calling out a glaring problem with this team, is the fact that, yeah, you beat the Kings, you get a point against Pittsburgh and San Jose, very good teams. You've looked well against the Bruins, you've skated with them, maybe even outplayed them despite losing in the last encounter. And yet, Columbus, didn't I predict this on a podcast or two ago? I said we'll lose that game to Columbus for sure. Just because that's the way again. They lose to Columbus, they lose to Anaheim, the worst teams they have no chance against. And for some reason, the best teams, they are always managing to get a point or look like the better club. And as you say, it's that is a mark of an inconsistent club for sure.
And I think there is a bit of a lack of leadership in the locker room right now. And I don't even mean that as an indictment on, you know, Brian Gionta, I think, has been a great captain, or, you know, Camilleri Plekanec. There's a lot of pros on that team, but someone's got to step up before these, you know, seemingly easy games and say, all right, boys, like, don't fall asleep tonight. We need these 2 points.
Yeah.
We're better than these guys. Let's go out there. Let's, you know, come out firing from the opening shift, and let's not make things any more difficult on us than they need to be.
Speaking of lack of leadership, lack of somebody stepping up and being the guy, will any of these Habs end up making it into the All-Star game?
After I wrote that question, before every 2-4, we kind of throw a couple questions back and forth to see what we're going to talk about. It occurred to me, does hockey have the baseball rule where you need to have one guy from every team?
I think so.
I think they do. So I guess
they might.
De facto, I think they did institute that sort of quietly recently. So, I mean, I guess there's going to be one.
Okay. Do any Habs deserve? Let's go with that.
Yeah, that's a much better way of putting it. Carey's been a borderline all-star this year. Off the top of my head, if I'm trying to think of goalies in the East, you know, Henrik and Thomas are...
Yeah,
surefire ones, and I guess you could pencil them in for that third spot.
Yeah, but arguably
beyond that, there's no one else who I think deserved a trip to Ottawa this year.
No, certainly not. As you say, Carey maybe, and his team's been letting him down a little, which hurts his numbers. So I think the third goalie could be Price, but there's not a single other player who at all deserves to be on that team, and. I know Ottawa's close to Montreal, and, you know, there'll probably be plenty of Habs fans there, although they're not stuffing the ballot box. And I think the fact that the team isn't stuffing the ballot box, because Montreal fans do like to do that a little bit, especially when it's kind of in the neighborhood, I think that shows the fans are not happy with this team as well. They don't think any of these guys should be there. I mean, these are fans that put Mike Komisarek in the starting lineup in an All-Star game, for crying out loud. So, I read today that RDS, their viewership is down about 14% this year, and the fact that there's no Hab who's even right now in a single All-Star role based on the votes, based on the fact that it's in Ottawa, a city that still, to some degree, has many, many Montreal fans, proves to me that the fans are actually getting very, very sick of this as well.
Yeah, I get that sense as well. Number six is this upcoming home swing, a make-or-break stretch for the Canadians. And just to refresh people's memory on the schedule coming up, we've got Vancouver Thursday night. We travel to the Garden State for a matchup with the Devils Saturday afternoon, and then three straight at home, the Islanders, the Flyers, and the Devils again.
Will it make or
break? So four of the next five at home.
Here's what I think. Here's not what I think. Here's what I want to see. I want to see Vancouver come in on Thursday and just absolutely level Montreal. Just destroy them. 7-1, 8-0, I don't care. New Jersey, once again, typical game. Marty Brodeur, who doesn't look like himself a lot these days. It's one of those games where he's old-school Marty Brodeur, stands on his head, nothing beats him. They win. New Jersey wins 2-0. And then we can start talking about Fire Gauthier for real. That's what I want to see happen. You know what's going to happen is they'll probably stand up well against Vancouver. They'll lose to New Jersey, and we'll just be in the same thing we've been doing all season.
Yeah, fair enough. I think it might be a make-or-break stretch, and I feel like a broken record because I feel like I say that every week. Or, you know, we got to turn around this week, or it ain't going to happen. But really, you've got, like I said, 4 out of 5 at home. By the time this swing's over, it's going to be almost Christmas. Yeah. And if you're still on the outside looking in come Christmas,
it's very hard.
Historically speaking, mathematically speaking, it's hard to climb your way back in.
Yep.
So if they don't get a couple of points, and it's not a, you know, it's not a gauntlet by any stretch. You got a couple winnable games in there.
Oh yeah, I mean this. They could easily, if I had any faith in them, like last year at this time, I see that stretch. I go, okay, yeah, we can build on this thing. This year, I don't have so much faith in the team. So, but you're right. This is probably realistically, mathematically, make or break.
Yeah, and I mean they got to show us something really, really soon, and especially after that, 6 straight road games after this little homestand. So.
Yeah, it's gonna. I mean, they always seem to do well on that stint, but nonetheless, this could be, if they don't get themselves, you know, if they don't continue to hover, if they struggle at all through this stretch, then I think you can definitely say broken season. So when is the Fire Gauthier, Fire Martin chant coming at the Bell Center? We haven't heard it yet, but you and I both get the sense it's simmering. It's a blowout loss. It's something embarrassing away from happening.
We haven't heard it yet. I really thought we were going to hear it last night.
I did too.
And like I said, part of me wanted that team to get booed off the ice last night.
I don't.
And you know, part of me wanted the Fire Martin chant to start. And then, I mean, obviously, you're not going to do it after Gionta ties the game.
No.
But it's coming soon. And if they get blown out tomorrow against Vancouver, which is certainly possible, or any of these upcoming home games, if they come out flat like they've done so many times, the boo birds will come out, and it's only a matter of time before. You know, we hear the Fire Martin chant.
Is it going to be Martin or Gauthier? I guess it'll be Martin first.
I get the sense that there's more dissatisfaction with the job Jacques Martin is doing than what Pierre Gauthier's done. I know personally that's how I feel, and I really get the sense people have reached the limit with Jacques Martin, whereas the jury's still out to a certain extent on Pierre Gauthier.
Well, I know you read that Michael Farber piece he wrote about Louis LeBlanc and the boring, boring hockey that we're being forced to watch right now in Montreal. Listeners, definitely try and check that out. Michael Farber wrote about Louis LeBlanc just coming up and the fact that he's the only mild thing that resembles excitement for this team right now. It's an excellent piece, but it also kind of paints the picture that, as you and I have said, and as you know, plenty have said, people are just really, really sick of this boring hockey. Number 8. This kind of goes back to the last one.
Number 8, yeah, no kidding. Who do you blame for the Andre Markov saga?
I've been thinking about this question for a while, and I'm going to make up my mind right now. I blame everybody involved. But for the saga, I'm going to blame Pierre Gauthier. Because he could so easily have given us information at any point. And he's done nothing but lie, turning it into a much bigger story than if prior to the season he'd said, you know, we actually have no idea of the timeline. Mr. Markov is healing in Florida and blah, blah, blah. Just tell us some things, and I don't think people would feel as much that it is a saga. It would just be Markov's hurt and he's having some setbacks, but we know that. But it's turned into this massive, massive kind of cloud that hangs around the team because Gauthier, for some reason, decides we can't handle the truth.
Yeah, like you said, there's plenty of blame to go around, but this has been a disaster for Gauthier. And for the most part, I've liked the job he's done up until now, but this is, you know, this Markov thing has really been, you know, Red Fisher said it was Gauthier's worst nightmare, and I really think it has been. It's been just one blunder after the other. I mean, he shouldn't have signed him in the first place, as far as I'm concerned.
But well, it seems obvious now.
As far as the injury stuff goes, it's just been, you know, setback after setback, delay after delay after delay. And like you said, had they been open about it from the very beginning, it'd be frustrating. But I think people would wouldn't be so fixated on it. Whereas, you know, this has been the story since training camp. Well, when's Markov coming back? When's Markov coming back? And, you know, they didn't want to admit that they'd thrown $18 million after a lemon. So they just kept trying to pretend that it was around the corner. And, you know, it's going to be probably February before he returns.
Is there any chance they thought that that strategy would work? I mean, everybody knows how rabid the fan base and how rabid the media are. Is there any way that simply ignoring it, we might not notice that your big offseason signing wasn't in the lineup? If you just, like, we'll sweep it under the rug, absolutely no one's going to notice that Andre Markov's not out there. And if they ask us, just say nothing, and they'll just go away quietly. Come on. I don't even see, there's nothing that they've handled mildly right about this Andre Markov situation, and I was one of the people who wanted to re-sign him, so I'll be on that camp as being on the wrong side of things because I liked him. But you know, at that, I also think you at some point you got to be honest, simply for the fact that you signed him. All right, number nine, we're getting off the Habs here. Can anyone beat the Bruins?
Sure doesn't look like it.
Well, no one has in a long time.
No one has in a long time, and they look incredible right now. They're playing just fantastic hockey. I, off the top of my head, at least, I can't remember a stretch like this by any team.
Nope, same here, actually.
Maybe Detroit had one a couple of years ago that I'm forgetting about, but they look incredible. Obviously, they're going to cool off. I mean, they're not going to finish the season 77-5.
Yeah,
but,
exactly.
They're going to cool off, but they're the team to beat in the East, without a doubt. I mean, the only other team in the conversation, I'd say, is Pittsburgh.
Yeah. What about Vancouver? I mean, suddenly they look good.
Suddenly they look good, too. It's funny, because I think everyone saw the Stanley Cup hangover coming for the Bruins, and they did stumble out of the gate a little bit. Whereas I think everyone thought, you know, Vancouver's going to be the same team they were last year. There's not going to be any letdown. They stumbled out, too, but they're rounding in the form.
Well, there's too much talent on both those teams to have had the funks that they were, and Boston obviously shook theirs off sooner. But I think the Canucks will continue to roll the same way. And as for can anyone beat them? I think Pittsburgh is the only team that maybe has a shot right now at really beating the Bruins. That's saying, you know, the New York Rangers look very good, but I think the Bruins still stand quite a bit ahead of them as well.
And finally, number 10, assuming Jacques Martin gets the axe at some point.
Well, he's not going to coach here forever.
You don't know that.
Oh, God, no.
Coach for life. Will he ever coach again after his stint with the Habs is mercifully over?
I don't think so. I really would be very surprised if he ever got another head coaching job. And I think if Montreal hadn't, you know, given him the shot out of Florida, I'm not sure he would have ever coached again. I actually thought his coaching days were behind him before we hired him. So, no, I think this is Jacques Martin's final job, especially if the team axes him at some point this season because things have just gone so much in the shitter. I think he won't be able to recover from that.
I'm going to lean in the other direction. I'm looking at it right now. He's only 59, which is relatively spry by head coach standards.
It's very young in elf years.
And, I mean, you know, NHL teams recycle coaches all the time, and I'm not, as much as I'm not a fan of the guy, he's got a quasi-decent track record, and, you know, he has had success, obviously. I do get the feeling that once he leaves Montreal, some other team will give him a chance for a couple of seasons. I don't think we've seen the last of him.
God have mercy on that team. he's not, to me, I don't want to watch his hockey anymore. And you're right. He probably will get another stab. On the other hand, the way things are going and the way that, you know, people seem to have a real problem with him in Montreal now, I'd be shocked at the team that does take him. That's not to say I don't think it will happen, because you're right, it probably will. But I just can't figure out how a general manager could reason himself into that. It's so boring. If you're playing this hockey in any other city besides Toronto, Montreal, even any of the Canadian cities, you could probably get away with it in a few of the big teams. But for the most part, I mean, you're just going to drain. Nobody's going to go watch this hockey if you're playing anywhere in the Sun Belt, any of the southern teams at all. You just can't put this hockey on the ice.
No, it's a hard sell, and it's not the type of coaching hire that's going to generate a lot of buzz in whatever market it happens in. But it's one thing I'll never understand about it. It's not just hockey. It's really every professional sport. It's,
yeah.
Once you get your foot in the door as a head coach, these guys get recycled like crazy.
Although there is kind of a youth movement right now in the NHL with head coaches. Well, with Kirk Muller getting the job, with Guy Boucher getting the job, but Dale Hunter getting the gig in Washington, there's a little bit of a push for a new generation.
Yeah, that is a good point. But I think Martin is one of those names that, because of his experience, because of the success he's had to a certain extent, he'll always be on a couple of short lists. And, you know, he'll probably manage to coach again, I would think.
We should have just traded him. We should have traded Martin to Anaheim for
Bobby Ryan.
For their coach that they ended up letting go. Who's the coach? And who was the coach?
Oh, Carlisle. Yeah. I'd love to see him.
Yeah, Dan Carlisle. Exactly. Would have been nice. What you gonna do? All right. Here's something I wanted to talk about, because Forbes just came out with the last week. Forbes came out with the list of the top money earning teams in the NHL. Montreal, as per usual, were number 3 behind the Toronto Maple Leafs, who were number 1. New York Rangers, number 2. Number 3 were the Habs. In the end, they make. So profit into Jeffrey Molson's pockets goes $47 million. This is after everything. This is pure profit. $47 million. Could he not sacrifice $7 million?
That is a very good point.
Because last week, or a couple podcasts ago, no, I think it was even the emergency podcast, I said, look, Jeff Molson, it's not about making money. He's not in the business of owning a hockey team, owning the Habs to make cash. He's doing it because who wouldn't want to? Because it's a family tradition for the Molsons. And, you know, literally, if you've got an opportunity to go get a team and you're a hockey fan at all, of course you're going to do that. And I said, so he's not, it's not like he's just sitting there and raking in the money. And, you know, that's the whole purpose of things. On the other hand, once you see this, you go, you know what? For the passionate fan base that is there, for the fact that no matter what, night in, night out, the Bell Center is sold out, and for the fact that you come from this long tradition of winning, the Molsons and the Canadians have many, many Stanley Cups together. Sacrifice $7 million, bud. The Brewery is doing fine. Send Scott Gomez to the AHL. Eat that contract. And yeah, you'll make us $7 million less, but you're still making $40 million just off this team that I think you own more as, you know, for the purpose of owning it rather than profit.
Yeah, it's time. I mean, it was time a year and a half ago, but I understand why they held off. But we've seen Scott Gomez at this point. He has 4 points on the season. We know what type of a player he is.
He didn't turn himself around, it turns out.
No, he didn't turn himself around. I mean, he was never going to be worth the contract, obviously, but maybe the thinking was, you know, he's still a semi-useful player. He's not even that anymore. I mean, I don't know what they're waiting for. It's obvious he's not going to turn it around. He doesn't have it anymore. And Montreal is one of the... It's not about the money, but I mean, Montreal is one of the few teams that has that luxury where they can just eat that bad contract. Maybe if you're Columbus or Nashville or Phoenix, you can't do that. If you're Montreal, if you're New York, if you're Toronto, you do. And we've seen New York, you know, New York's handed out plenty of stupid contracts, but they've at least had the balls to admit their mistakes and send their guys to Hershey. Montreal needs to do the same thing. It's, look, you made a mistake. It happens, but what's worse than making a mistake is a stubborn refusal to admit that you've made one and to do anything about it. So you made a mistake trading for that $7 million per season contract. Own up to it. Send him down to Hamilton. Clear that space off. I want to send Markov down to Hamilton too, frankly. But I mean, just own up to your mistakes, clear some cap space, and let's start moving forward so that this isn't just an albatross that continues to hang around the team's neck.
You could find a very nice piece out there with an extra $7 million sitting around.
Yeah, you could.
One or two pieces, two tremendous pieces at $3.5 million. Come on. Then we'll start talking about maybe the fact that if you send, that's the thing. You can fix this problem, maybe. If you send Scott Gomez down, that's enough cap space to perhaps fix all the problems, quite frankly.
Yeah, and I don't really understand
what the left is at this point. Not all the problems. Many of the problems.
Many of the problems. I mean, look, if you can clear, like you said, if you can clear $7 million of the cap space, that gives you a lot of room to maneuver. And you can rebuild in a hurry in this league. People forget that. But it is doable. And I don't understand what the rationale is for keeping him at this point. I know it's, you know, it's tough. You don't want to send the guy down. And I know
but that it's not like
really a last resort, but it's not like it's never been done.
No.
You know, it happened to Sheldon Surrey. It happened to Chris Drury. It happened to Wayne Redden. There are bad contracts out there, and sometimes you just got to eat it. And Montreal has that luxury. And it's such a league of parity right now that if you have an advantage, you damn well better use it. And Montreal has this at its disposal. It's one of the few teams that can do this, and it still stubbornly refuses to do so.
And don't Montreal fans, for all the cash that we pour into this team, deserve the Molsons to take home $7 million less? So they still make $40 million off the team, everybody. Like, it's not... I don't feel too bad for them. For everything that this team is worth, for all that your fan base gives you, for the chance that you could probably do something, and in Gauthier's case, maybe save him and Jacques Martin's job if you have $7 million to go out and get somebody. How do you not make this move? How does that not happen? There's nothing in place for me that says, oh, it shouldn't happen because of this. And I used to even accept the argument, yeah, but you can't do that because of the message that it sends to the rest and to future guys that you're trying to sign. No, nobody at this point is going to be discouraged. Even the players on the team are going to go, well, yeah, the guy had 4 points. He's making $7.3 million. Max Pacioretty must love the fact that Scott Gomez, Mr. 4 points, is getting $7 million a season. Like, nobody, he's not even an NHLer at this point. He belongs in the AHL with the way he's playing. So there's no argument. His talent isn't there. It's not like one of these guys who is good enough. Anyways, fair all enough. That to say, for everything that, you know, he's not even an NHL player at this point. He's really got AHL stuff. And so, bury the contract. It shouldn't be disputable. That's it. That's all I got to say on that one.
Yeah, and it speaks to the arrogance of the front office that we talked about so many times. And, you know, just this refusal to admit that they're wrong. And, we know, and you know, not that they should be heeding every demand that the fans and the media make, but it's just that we always know what's best. And we can somehow ascertain the value of Scott Gomez better than you can. And like I said, teams make mistakes. There's not a team out there that doesn't make a mistake. But Montreal has the ability to sort of wipe that mistake off the books. And I, for the life of me, can't understand why you wouldn't take advantage of that.
Nope, I can't figure it out either. All right, you want to take a break? We'll talk to our girl, Steph Darwish, and then we'll come back. We'll take a look at the schedule ahead a little bit more in depth. We'll hand out our 3 stars in a new segment on this podcast as well. So once again, as promised, become a permanent accessory on the 2-4. Steph Darwish, welcome back.
Thank you for having me again.
I broke my promise to you, though.
What did you do?
We don't have a theme song for you yet because I spent all my theme song time putting together the Evil Angry Emergency Podcast theme song.
That's okay. I'll accept your apology.
What is this is painting an even more clear picture of you. But if we're choosing a song, what kind of what are you feeling is the right vibe to come into your segment?
Oh, I don't know. I'm stuck in the '90s with my music.
So
I can't get out of it.
So you want some Semi Charm Life?
No, but like
it sounds appropriate as a Habs fan.
Maybe I liked I don't know. I have no opinion on music.
A little bittersweet symphony?
What it would be?
I said a little bittersweet symphony.
Oh my God, no, kill me. You can't do that at all.
We won't do that to you.
Thank you.
So yeah, I spent all my hard-earned energy on the anger and the angry theme song that went into the emergency podcast. So,
which apparently, how do you make a theme song?
Oh, very carefully, with a lot of, it takes artistic skill on the old computer, I'll tell you that.
So skilled.
I know, thank you. Skill, let's talk about it. We're not seeing a ton of it from our Habs.
Well, in the skill competitions, that is a shootout. We're terrible, aren't we?
Yeah, I know.
You know what? I knew it wouldn't happen because of who is behind our bench. But wouldn't Louis LeBlanc have been a fun addition to last night's shootout?
Why on earth would Louis LeBlanc not shoot in that situation? It's not like anyone else has given you reason to think they deserve it.
Exactly. A, entertainment value. People paid a lot of money to be at that game that sucked. At least give them something to cheer about.
Yep.
And the worst that's going to happen is he doesn't score. But if he did score, imagine how happy he would be and
the
how
roof,
happy the whole 21,000 people would
come
would be.
Off. Everyone would be in a better mood today. Not just because of the win, just because Louis LeBlanc scores the winner. It's hope. It's something going forward. But why would we want to risk that? Why would we try that?
I know, exactly. It's just, they're very conservative, and they forget at the end of the day that this is an entertainment and entertainment dollars, and give a little show sometimes.
At least if you're not going to win, and I've said this quite a few times on this podcast now, if you're not going to win, entertain us, give us something.
Yes, I agree with that.
If you're going to play the most mundane, boring hockey, and you're still going to lose games, at least give the fans Louis LeBlanc in the shootout to cheer for. Give us something. Something to chew on right now.
I know. It's just, it's too bad that they've lost sight of that a little bit, I feel, anyways. They're running it like we're deciding on foreign policy when...
Yep, exactly.
Anyway. That's the skills for me right now.
What about this Markov thing? How do you feel?
I'm torn, because I feel like the human part of me, imagine what he's going through. This poor guy, he hasn't played hockey consistently in 2 years, probably.
Yeah.
But the other part of me is like, that was Wisniewski money. I wish we would have kept Wisniewski and let Markov try on the free agent market.
See,
he wouldn't have to play.
I agree, but we would have never got Wisniewski for that price. And I think even paying, Wisniewski has had one more knee surgery than Andre Markov.
Yes.
He's younger, but still. I was happy. I was fine with Wisniewski not, because I knew he was going to get a payday like he got in Columbus.
Well, what's this, Columbus 6?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah,
it just seems too much to spend on a guy like
that's
James Wisniewski.
That's a lot, actually.
Because he's kind of one-dimensional.
Okay. Yeah, he is very one-dimensional. You're right. Compared to Ed Markov, makes like 5-something. Yeah, okay. I wouldn't want to pay 6 for Wisniewski either, actually. I take back what I said.
But the point still stands. You feel for Markov, you liked him when he was there, but, and then you start dreaming of what you could do with $6 million extra to spend.
And we have it, right? Because he's on IR, so it's our money to spend.
But the thing is, that has to come off as soon as he comes back. So I remember when we talked about Markov in the forum way back early in the season, it was you that said, if he's going to be injured, I hope it's just sustained throughout, so at least we can go and spend that money and not in and out and close. And yet, so we're looking at your worst case scenario right now.
We are.
Yep.
And we haven't done anything to augment it.
Not at all.
I mean, we're getting Campoli back, but I don't know Campoli.
No, me.
I don't know. He hasn't played for the Habs ever, really.
Yeah, exactly. What, did he play a period?
He played a period. He played a game in a period, I think, actually. And he was on the power play, I guess, in the preseason.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know Campoli from... I'm trying to think of another defenseman. I don't know that well.
That's what you can't name him because you don't know him that well.
I don't know from player back.
There you go. No, it's true.
He's a center, I know that.
He could come back and, he could come back and, at least he's a proven top 6 defenseman. So...
Yes.
That's something, right? If we're all grasping at these straws, which we are at this point.
But then... I guess, and who's going to sit?
It's going to be Diaz.
Diaz, not Weber?
I think it's going to be Diaz because Weber's played in the NHL longer, and Jacques Martin just seems to really believe in seniority rule. Whereas I wouldn't...
Oh.
Either Diaz or Weber, I wouldn't really care what goes on there.
I know. I hope he doesn't sit Emelin, though.
He's not going to sit Emelin. Emelin's emerging.
I know, wasn't that great to see him last night?
Ah, that was by far the best game he's played.
I know. I loved him last night. I was in love with him last night. He was great.
And if I remember, to harken back to the beginning of the season once more, you and I both agreed that we didn't think he maybe had the NHL chops.
We did. You're right. I take it back now.
Yeah, no, I do too.
I guess, you know what, for me, I guess when someone comes from Russia, doesn't speak the language, doesn't know the ice, doesn't know the NHL game, I don't... it's hard, isn't it? What does he do at night time? Does he talk to?
No, and it's also how many times have we seen it fail, where somebody comes over very highly hyped from the KHL or somewhere else, like at Gustavsson in Toronto, and ends up being very average to maybe shouldn't even be in the league. And I honestly expected that from Emelin. I thought it was going to be another case of that, and right now it doesn't seem like that's going to be what happens. He's turning into a legitimate NHLer and a piece
and
that Montreal needs.
It says a lot about his character, too. Like, he struggled. It would have been so easy. If I were him, I'd have been like, you know what? I can get my paycheck in Russia. I have family. I have friends. I can speak to people. Like, it's a lonely thing that he's embarking on, and he's, I don't know, it's a good character he has.
No, it's true. He's impressed me a lot. So I was wrong about that. I'm rarely wrong about anything, but... that one I made a mistake on.
Well, then I was wrong, too.
Yeah, we were off. Once in a while, you're off. It's not a big deal.
Yeah, I guess.
We can't be perfect. The worst thing would be if we made mistakes over and over and refused to acknowledge that they were a mistake, Mr. Paragotsia.
Paragotsia. I think it's time Mr. Gauthier goes, as he likes to say.
I agree. Mr. Gauthier, show him the door. Even before... no, actually, Jacques Martin first... then Pierre Gauthier. Or if they want to leave as a duo, I'm fine with that.
I think they have to go as a duo.
I think so, too.
I think they're a prepackaged deal.
Yeah, I think we get rid of them as a duo, which I'd be happy with.
And wasn't Gauthier just acting GM when Ganey left? And how did he lose the acting part of his title?
Well, by doing such a fantastic job.
Oh, yeah, thanks.
He missed that one.
Yeah, he missed that.
He earned it.
I thought that he would be replaced within the season once Ganey left.
No, I mean, it would kind of seem like a handing of the torch. It was going to be Gauthier's ship to run as he saw fit, and he sees fit to still be there. I think if anyone was kind of going to remove him, it was going to have to be him, so.
Yeah, I guess.
And that's not happening.
Oh. No, it's not going to happen at all. Well, I hope it happens, but I don't think it's going to happen before the summer.
No, I don't think so either. After they scored... in the final minute last night, and I've already talked about this earlier, but I wanted to get your read on it. So they end up getting a point against Columbus. Is this team not just continuing to do just enough to keep everybody happy and keep everybody almost happy and, not
I know
be
you're,
a sinking
you know what,
ship?
You're right. It would have been if we're looking long term.
Yeah.
It would have been better if Gionta hadn't scored that great goal and they lose a game again.
Because then they've lost to Columbus.
Yes, then they've lost to Columbus.
They've lost to Columbus and Anaheim within a 1 week's period, and they've got Vancouver, which, you know what, they'll probably be ready for that game because it's the Canucks and they're good, and they seem to play well against good teams. But then they got New Jersey on Saturday in the afternoon. Easy one to lose, no question. So there was a good chance things could have got real rough, and then we could have maybe been having a real discussion that Martin's job might be on the line. But now
they'd fire Ladouceur. They'd find another scapegoat before they got rid of just to prove. I feel sometimes like Gauthier just wants to prove the fan base wrong.
Oh yeah,
like, oh, this is what you want me to do. I'm gonna do something else just to make you madder.
You're right, because he's a he really thinks he's much more intelligent than everybody. He really sees a very high opinion of himself, right?
He does have a high opinion of himself, I agree.
And you're right. It's when people say he's made a mistake, he's one of these guys who I think backs harder into that mistake to prove somehow that it wasn't a mistake. And clearly, in a few of these cases, it's very much been a mistake. And the whole handling of the Markov thing, he's done it terribly. And as I was saying earlier to Sean, it's simply because he seems to want to deny the fact that things aren't going the way he kind of hoped. And so if he just tries to make it go away, it might go away, which obviously doesn't happen.
I know, and his secrecy, I think, at one point now is getting too much.
Oh, yeah.
Like when Markov was, are you kidding me? It's a joke. Markov is missing. You know where he is.
Yeah.
You've obviously been in contact with him. It's too much, I think. and he takes it, I don't know, I don't want to say he takes it too seriously because it's a very serious job, but he forgets who, at the end of the day, who his bosses are, and those are the people who buy Habs merchandise, watch games, and pay the exorbitant prices to go to the games.
Couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah, Pierre Gauthier.
Sean and I threw this about earlier in the opening 20. Do you think December is going to be make or break for this team?
Yeah, I mean, I know that the old adage is that if you have to wait till All-Star break, but I think December is make or break only because it's too hard to catch up. I think if you're in 8th, 7th, 6th, you have to make the push at the All-Star break, but I don't know. I don't want to miss the playoffs. That'd be the worst. I don't like it when we miss the playoffs. I even forget what it's like. It's been so long.
Yeah, it has been
a long
time.
But it would kind of ruin spring, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but if they make the playoffs, Steph, Jacques Martin might keep his job.
I know.
Do you want to do another season of this? Another season of the boring hockey?
I forget. Remind me. Is his third season right now?
Oh, now I've forgotten. Yeah, this will be the third
season.
This is season three.
So wasn't it a 3-year contract he had?
You might be right about that.
I forget. I mean, don't quote me, but if it's a 3-year contract...
I don't need to quote you. It's on the podcast recorded.
What's that?
I said, I don't need to quote you. It's recorded on the podcast. Set in stone.
Okay, no one else quote me.
No one listened to that part.
Yeah. Edit that out quickly.
Nope, no edits.
Oh.
Everything stays.
What if I swear?
You can say whatever the fuck you want.
Oh, I guess so, eh?
Exactly. If you ever feel the need to exercise it, be my guest. It feels good.
Yeah, I. You know what? One time I swore in a blog post I wrote, and my parents never read my blog, ever.
Right.
And then they read that one, and my dad called me, and he's like... He got really upset at me. He got really upset at me. So now I'm very conscious.
Okay.
My parents
I won't push you into that. On the other hand, Missy, let's discuss the title of your morning after today.
I know.
If we're going to be treading around things, you had some fun with that one.
But it wasn't really, because it could be like the Blue Jackets are supposed to suck, right?
Oh, so you're pretending that nothing else crept into your mind when you wrote that?
No, at all,
You're pleading complete innocence.
It's just a coincidence.
I loved it. I was very happy when I came across that this morning.
Oh, thank you.
Fantastic title. And people, if you haven't read it yet, go read Sucking BJs.
Because they're supposed to suck.
Exactly. There's a whole explanation. Don't worry about it. I tell you. All right, you got anything else you want to get off your chest about the Habs in your little segment that remains unnamed?
No, I think the only thing really is that I'm disappointed that they keep Louis LeBlanc up for a home game and then play him under 5.
And didn't start him.
And then And then that they lose to the Blue Jackets, and now we have Vancouver, who they'll win against because we do well against fast teams. And then, I don't know, it's going to be same old, same old. I'm feeling a little bit of non-enthusiasm lately.
Yep, I agree. I completely agree. A little bit of non-enthusiasm, which is the worst.
It is. And you know what? When I have tickets to a game, I'm really excited by it. I had tickets to last night's game, and I gave them away.
Oh, my.
I know. I think that says a lot.
That speaks volumes.
I give them away to Louis LeBlanc's ex-high school coach.
Well, look at you.
So there was... I'm such a giver.
Look at that.
But I would never have done that usually.
All these stories last week and then this week we find out this. Just discovering so much every time we do one of these segments.
I know. Because he went to Cooper Academy.
Yeah.
In Kirkland.
Well, he likes his fancy schools.
You went to Cooper?
What's that?
You went to Cooper Academy?
No, I'm saying he likes his fancy schools, Louis LeBlanc.
Yeah, he does like his fancy schools. Right, Harvard, Cooper.
I went to Alexander Galt Regional High School in the Eastern Townships.
Oh, I don't even know.
Not a fancy school. I enjoyed it, but not a fancy school. Resembles a prison.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It was a great time, but physically, its structure looks like a prison, that's all.
Oh.
These things happen.
Well, yeah, so that's all. That's all I have to say about the Habs this Monday. Or what day? Wednesday.
Wednesday. You're doing all right. All right, we'll bring you back, and I don't know. I'll do what I can to try and come up with some sort of theme song, and we got to name this thing as well. So be thinking on that.
Okay, awesome. I love a good cover name.
All right, thanks for doing this.
Okay, have a great night.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And once again, thanks to Steph Darwish for doing that. Let's take a look what we got coming up in the foreseeable future, Sean.
Taking a look at the schedule, we did discuss this briefly, but we'll run through it one more time. So we're doing this podcast Wednesday night. Thursday night, we have the Canucks. So tomorrow night, tonight, depending when you're listening to this. So tough game against the defending Western Conference champs. Then Saturday afternoon, 1 p.m. puck drop at the Prudential Center in Jersey.
Oh, I love, if there's one thing I love, it's afternoon games against the New Jersey Devils. You can
second
sell
Saturday
me that
in
all.
A row.
Yeah, I know, eh? Bizarre.
It's so bizarre, the afternoon games. Like, the crowd's not into it. Half the players are probably still hungover. They're just, you know, I'm probably still hungover when I'm watching it.
If they spent the night before in Jersey, they're wiping off the VD. Sorry, Jersey.
It's so weird. And then Saturday night comes and you don't know what the hell to do because the hockey game's already taking place.
Well, now you just sound sad, man.
That's very true.
I don't know what to do if I'm not watching hockey on a Saturday.
I'll just sit in my room and cry.
The internet that, is back, porn.
What's that?
I said the internet has porn.
It does?
I thought you might not know that. I was wondering why you had time for podcasts and things. All right, what do we got after the
development? After that, we're back in Montreal. Islanders in town on Tuesday. So
oh, there's a loss.
That.
Yeah,
that inexplicable loss earlier this season. We got the Flyers on Thursday. We got a rematch against the Devils the following Saturday, December 17th. And then looking further down the horizon, like I said,
yeah,
six
take
straight
us to Christmas
games. At Boston, at Chicago, at the Jets, at the Sens, at the Lightning, and then at Florida on New Year's Eve.
Yeah, December's going to make a break.
Yeah, so that's what we got between now and 2012. And, you know, not a couple tough games in there, but it's not an absolutely brutal, brutal stretch.
No.
So you'd think they're going to turn things around. And yeah. I know I sound like a broken record, but now would be a pretty good time to do it.
Do you think they will?
I don't. And I know I'm just, part of me is just being pessimistic because the team's looked so blah all season long. I know the talent's there and I know history has shown that this team does have an ability to sort of come through when they need to, but this team has really shown, except for that little stretch after Perry Parn got fired.
Yeah, there was a good 10-game stretch at one point.
There was a good 10-game stretch, which I thought was the beginning of something, yeah. And now it's looking like it might be the highlight of the season.
God, I hope not.
That's as sad as that sounds.
I know. That is brutal.
I don't, it's possible, but, you know, that's based more on just wishful thinking than anything at this point, because this team really hasn't shown me anything at all that would suggest that.
No, nothing to indicate at all that they can turn it around. Spacek and Campoli are practicing with contact now. Should that give us reason to be psyched?
I mean, psyched is an overstatement. I mean, it's nice to get two of your legitimate top six defensemen back. I mean, I never would have thought that those two guys would be coming back before Markov, but that's where we're at.
That is where we're at. Everybody's coming back before Markov. The next Hab that gets a major injury will be back in the lineup before Andre Markov.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. If nothing else, it'll be nice to see Campoli. I mean, we only saw him for a period.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he doesn't even feel like he's on this team, so.
No, so that'll be a nice piece, at least see what we have there. And Spacek, for all the shit I've piled on him over the past couple of years, he's been playing pretty well this year.
That was another real mistake by the organization. We go and get Spacek. You and I, we've talked about this. We've said, we liked that signing when it happened, and then he just didn't look like the Spacek we thought we'd recognize from Buffalo. And yeah, he switched sides, but I don't know how important that is to a defenseman. Turns out probably pretty important. He finally returns to his proper position that he's played his entire career, and he did. He looked good until, you know, a couple injuries now have sidelined him a little bit longer than preferable, but I'd like to see him back.
I would too. I mean, that little, before he got injured, that was his best stretch in a Habs uniform.
Oh, for sure. No doubt.
Like you said, I mean, I don't, you know, some players are able to make that switch pretty seamlessly and some really aren't.
And yeah, but I mean, it's not like there was any evidence that indicated that he had pulled it off. So I don't see why that he didn't shift back over at any point, even to see what happened. But, you know, this is the Jacques Martin era, and we've got to get used to the fact that things are done a certain way and they stay a certain way.
They sure do.
All right, let's do our three stars. Speaking of changing things up, I wanted to propose something to you.
Let's hear it.
All right. You know how we each shoot boom, 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 one, two, three, our three stars? What if we we go tier by tier?
Oh, build up some tension?
I think that's the way to do it. So who's your number three?
Number three on the week is PK Subban, who... taken plenty of grief this season, some of it deserved, some of it unearned. But in any case, I think he's kind of turned it around recently. And I think, you know, his, you know, the crap he was getting was a little over the top. I never thought he was that bad this year, but he's looked better, at least in my opinion, the last couple games. I thought he was really good against LA. And he had one takeaway last night in overtime, which was just astonishing. And, you know, he still makes those sophomore mistakes, but I think he's starting to turn it around a little.
I'm going to agree with you because my third star is also PK Subban, mainly for the point that if he makes a mistake, mathematically, there's a reason for that. And that's because he played 30 minutes last night.
Yeah.
When you're on the ice for 30 minutes, you might make a couple more mistakes than the guy who's on the ice for 8 minutes. 30 minutes. I'm sorry, I know PK is young. I know PK would play all 60 minutes if you let him. But 30 minutes is actually way too much time. And, you know, I can't really see any story in which, you know, unless we're talking playoffs when you go into triple overtime, anybody should be hitting 30 minutes. But he's still my third star because I'm bitching about Martin there. I like PK Subban, and you know what? You're right. In overtime, despite playing all those minutes, he's still a great takeaway. He's a fantastic player. He's going to make mistakes. He's going to do that his entire career. But he's also going to mature. So yeah, PK Subban, third star. My second star, simply because everybody else has ups and downs, and, you know, there's one player on the team that I see just... He always gets off to a slow start, but year after year, you can put him on the board for playing majority of the games. You can put him on the board for being a very strong leader, and you can put him up there for about 25 goals year in, year out. That's our captain, Brian Gionta, scoring another big one the other night. I mean, it only turned into 1 point, but it did salvage a point. And I think there's one very consistent player on the team, no matter what, it's Brian Gionta, and I don't think he gets enough credit in a way for what he actually can do. And if he had, you know, guys playing better around him or even consistently around him, then I think we'd probably think better of him in a way.
Yeah, he's extremely reliable. Like you said, it gets lost a little bit in the shuffle, but he's really been everything we could have asked for when we brought him in.
He's got 8 goals. He's going to finish the season with 25, 26 again. I mean, he's pretty much clockwork.
My second star of the week, and I sound like a broken record because I think he's been my star, one of my stars of the week more often than not on the 2-4 here, but that's Eric Cole.
I was going to try and guess.
He's
always your second star, too. He always sits right in the middle there.
Right in the middle of the three stars. And
he's the lucky Pierre.
Not that he's even he's actually going through a little bit of a cold stretch, I think.
Yeah.
I'd have to go through the game logs. I mean, it's been a couple games at least since he scored, but you know, he's still going out there. He's always in the mix of things, always has a couple of scoring chances every game. You know, I loved the whole story of flying Louis LeBlanc's parents out for his game in
class
Anaheim
act.
I thought that was really class act, and you know, it's just been fun to have a free agent signing that actually works. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just because I like the signing, I think most people did, but you're always a little nervous. And there were questions, you know, can you do it without Eric Staal? Can you do it in a hockey mad market? All this stuff. And I thought it was going to work, but there was always a chance it was going to be Sergei Samsonov point two, because you never really know until they hit the ice. And he's been, well, much like Brian Gionta, he's done everything we could have possibly asked for him when we brought him in. And, you know, I mean, anything could happen over the next couple of years, but it's looking like a really, really good signing by Pierre Lesier right now.
Yeah, it is. And I was watching the game, I believe it was the Tuesday night game, saying it's so nice to have a real hockey player on the team with really, he can do the speed, he's got finesse, he seems to be able to handle himself, he's a good size. It's really nice to just have a guy who doesn't feel like there's any significant handicap to his game. I like that second star. And yes, it does sound like a broken record, but a deserved broken record. It's not as predictable as the Molson Cup win every month.
Yeah, speaking of which, my first star, I was going to give it to Carey, but I mean, we could give it to Carey every week because
yeah,
know, he's the plaster that's holding this team together. So I'm going to switch it up, last minute switcheroo, and give it, I can't believe I'm saying this, to Andre Kostitsyn, who's been really good this year. And, you know, he had that goal at the end of the first period in the Columbus game with, well, it's 2.5 seconds left, 1.5 seconds left. And that's the type of goal he wouldn't have scored last year. You know, he'd look up at the clock and see there's only a couple seconds left, and he'd, you know, just kind of coast until the end of the period. And he looks like he gives a crap, and he's still streaky. And, you know, lots of players are streaky. Mike Camilleri is streaky, and it's not because he doesn't care. And AK is always going to be streaky, but he finally looks like he's maybe getting it a little bit.
I agree. And for the first time in the Tuesday night game, I thought to myself that if we keep signing AK to one-year contracts, then I'm fine with it. He can stay on the team as long as he wants, as long as it's a one-year deal, because he's always going to be a decent trade tool, if need be, when you get to the deadline. There's always going to be a team that's willing to take a guy who scores 20 to 25 goals, 26 goals every season. So you'll be able to get something back for Andre Kostitsyn, and one season at a time, as long as he doesn't have a big, comfy contract. You know, I'm not against having a guy playing generally on the third line who's going to get you 25 goals and on the right time has a little bit of finesse and a little bit of, you know, as long as he gives a shit. And as you say, right now he seems to.
Yeah, that's a good point. And, you know, the thing about AK is, and like, for all the crap he's gotten, and don't get me wrong, it's been mostly deserved. But for all the crap that he's getting, there are worse things to have on your roster than a guy who's a lock for 25 goals, which he has been.
There's a guy with 4 points at 7 million.
As enigmatic as he is good for the, you know, he's not Scott Gomez. He is good for those 25 goals a season, and always has been, and probably always will be.
He's not Scott Gomez.
It's
not a compliment, but it's something. Mon première étoile, the first star. And here's a guy that I didn't think would have the chops in the NHL, to be honest. And he does. I was wrong. Alexei Yemelin, however you want to say it, the kid can hit.
Yeah, he is a beast.
And he seems to have taken that next step in, I'd say, since the California trip. Suddenly, I'm very much convinced he's an NHLer, and I'm very happy he's on this team, to be honest with you.
Yeah, he has been very impressive lately, and there's still a couple hiccups, but he, you know, we've needed a really physical presence like that on the blue line since Komisarek left, and he's just been a beast back there. He's been really, really impressive.
I think everyone was right.
I think he stays in the top six even when Campoli and Spacek get back.
I agree, and I think everyone who is saying that Markov's return would help Emelin a lot, we're probably right. The more I think about it and the more I've seen his game come on and the more he, as you say, he's been that player who's kind of like Mike Komisarek, you know, except he probably doesn't hit women. I don't know. Maybe he does, but I don't think he does. And so I like him better than Mike Komisarek for that reason alone. All that to say, though, Markov and Komisarek, they were very good at what they did together because Markov can just do so much out there. So people were right, although it may never turn out to be the case now. Yeah, the fact that he was Russian and could probably communicate well with the young Emelin, and the fact that suddenly I've noticed this is a very, very physically imposing player who really can dish it out. Should Markov ever come back, it will be interesting to see what those two do together. Oh, yeah, Mike Komisarek's a piece of shit. All right, and there's a new... See, we're very much... We love to do try something new. Goatsy and Mountain should take note. We got another... We got a new segment before we get out of here today.
We do, and we've delicately named it the Douchebag of the Week.
Is it going to be the Douchebag of the Week? Because I was thinking we could call it, like, just the douche. And then when I'm like, Sean, drop a douche. And then like that. How would that work?
That works. Yeah. I like that we're having our show planning meetings on the air. This must be thrilling radio for everyone who's listening. But send in your suggestions. We'll call it something, the Douchebag of the Week, or dropping the douche.
All right.
Or what have you. We might even come up with a jingle. Who knows?
Who knows what we'll do. Anyways, Sean, drop a douche.
My douche of the week is...
No, that's perfect. I'm sorry. Anybody, you can't write in anything better than that drop a douche line.
I love it. I'm fully on board. This week I'm dropping a douche towards Andrei Markov. Towards in the direction.
It's directional? I did not know.
Might as well be. And it's going Andrei Markov. And listen, I realize that that's to a very large extent unfair. the guy is hurt. But you know what? I mean, part of this, we do part of this because we think we have something to say and we try and analyze it. But at the same time, we're fans. And you're not always rational when you're a fan. And the irrational part of me is just really pissed off at Andrei Markov right now. And look, the guy's hurt. You can't, you know, it's a contact sport. You're going to get hurt. There's no indication that he's taken his rehab lightly or that he's, you know, doesn't want to come back as soon as possible. And I'm sure he's doing all the right things and there's just been setbacks. And it's not fair to hold that against him, but I do. I just, you know, he signed the contract and he was supposed to be back 5 games into the season and now he doesn't come back to February. And I place much more blame at the feet of Pierre Gauthier than I do at the feet and knees of Andrei Markov. But, I can't help but be mad at the guy. You know, I feel like he's ripped the Habs off of $18 million and, you know, really set the franchise back a step or two.
It's fair. Decently douched.
Thank you.
All right, now you say it to me.
Zach?
Yes?
Drop a douche.
Oh, that's golden. I expect we'll get real jobs out of this at this point now. Now that we've shown this kind of ingenuity. And I don't like people who don't think that change and honesty and perhaps giving the fans a little bit of information would make us happy, since we're willing to pay hundreds of dollars for tickets, hundreds more on apparel. RDS gets a good chunk of cash simply because I'm always watching the Habs. So with all the money we're all fueling into this team, we deserve something worth putting on the ice. And right now, Pierre Gauthier is the man who could fire the cannons, get rid of Jacques Martin, give us a little bit of hope. And so because of that, right now, I'm at level 2 of the 3-step process where Pierre Gauthier is the guy I'm blaming for all the problems. Because he could get rid of Jacques Martin. He could probably get it convinced that Scott Gomez belongs in the AHL. So he's the guy right now who could fix this team and isn't. And but as we go further, my douche could be going somewhere else, a little bit higher, for simply refusing to get rid of Gauthier as we move along. But right now, Gauthier, I think, is the problem. And that's my douche.
Yeah, at this point, it's hard to argue.
All right, that's it. We douched. We starred.
We douched. We,
we opened 20.
Exactly.
We talked to Steph. So there you go. That's a podcast.
It was fun. And, you know, a little a regular episode of the 2-4. So even though we're both still pretty down on the
team, it wasn't quite as cathartic as we expected. We didn't come back all rosy and sunshine.
No, the emergency angry podcast was fun, but there's still plenty of, you know, hatred that I've got stored up towards this team right now.
Getting reactions back from that emergency podcast, you and I made one crucial mistake in assuming that it was going to be cathartic to everybody because it was a little bit cathartic to us. It turned out if you're not the one speaking into the microphone, all it does is boil your anger further. So we apologize to everybody who we said, listen to this and you'll feel a little better after, because it, from the sounds of things, it just made everybody feel worse. Except you and I, and that's why we do everything.
Yeah, I don't really care how anyone else feels. So.
No. Exactly. All right. Good talk.
It's been fun, and we'll...
Hey, we're going to be at the Bell Center on Friday.
We are going to be at the Bell Center Friday.
For something worth seeing.
Yeah, I expect the National to put on a much better show than Scott Gomez.
Nico Case better not Scott Gomez it out there. Yeah. Nail it in. All right. Good talk. See you on the other side.
See you Friday night.
Woo!